Random House Audible presents Drowning Roof by Christina Schwartz. Drowning Roof. Part 1. Chapter 1. Ruth remembered drowning. "That's impossible," Aunt Amanda said. "Must have been a dream." But Ruth maintained that she had drowned, insisted on it for years, even after she should have known better. Amanda. Of course I lied to Ruth. She was only a child. What should I have said? That her mother had been reckless. That I'd had to rescue her, give her new life, bring her up as my own. There are things children are not meant to know. I suppose people will say it was my fault, that if I'd not gone home that March in 1919, Matilda, my only sister, would not be dead. But I did go home. The way I saw it, I hadn't any choice. March 27th, 1919. That's a good place to begin. That's what I wrote in the top right corner of the page. Dear Maddie. The pen shook as I raised it, splattering ink. March 27th, 1919, I wrote on a fresh sheet. Dear Maddie. In the end, I didn't bother to write. I knew I would be welcome. After all, Maddie had been begging me to come home for months. And what could I say? I had no explanation. No explanation but the truth. And I certainly didn't want to tell that. The truth was that the hospital had asked me to leave. Not permanently, of course. Of course we don't want you to go permanently, Miss Starkey, Dr. Nichols said. It wasn't clear whom he meant by we, since he and I were the only ones in the office. It made me nervous knowing there were others who had talked about me, perhaps whispering in the hallways, ducking around corners when they saw me coming. They probably gathered in this very office, sipped coffee, shook their heads, and tut-tutted me. Who were they? Dr. Nichols moved some papers around on his desk. He did not look at me. When this is over, he cleared his throat, when you're yourself again, then we'll reconsider. He was referring to my hallucinations, I believe, although it may have been the fainting, or even the accidents. He studied the desktop for a moment and then sighed, saying almost kindly, "You'll feel much better away from this stink, believe me." There was a stink in the hospital. A literal stink, of gangrenous flesh and vomit, of ammonia and burnt oatmeal and camphor, of urine and feces. But a nurse gets used to the smells and the screams, and the sight of the men missing pieces of themselves. And I was a brilliant nurse. I had the touch. Everybody said so. The men worshipped me. Those with faces lifted them toward me when I bent over their beds. Those with arms held them out. I loved being an angel, but I had to give it up. Dr. Nichols had a point. Somehow I had lost control. One morning I woke up sure, absolutely positive, that my legs had been sawn from my trunk. And although I quickly realized that I had only been dreaming, my legs were right there, two ridges under the blanket. I couldn't move them, couldn't rise no matter how I tried. My roommate, Eliza Fox, had to pull me out of bed. Another time, I'm ashamed to say, I actually fainted across a soldier's chest while giving him a sponge bath. Several times I had to run from the wards to vomit. My inside spewed out every morning into bedpans and janitor's buckets and hastily twisted newspaper cones and the snowdrift behind the hydrangea hedge. Twice I lost the hearing in my left ear, and once I spent 4 hours sitting in the stairwell waiting for my sight to return. Syringes flew out to stab my arms. Glass vials shattered in my hands. File drawers pinched the tips of my fingers. I forgot soldiers' names and the purpose of errands. 3 days in a row, I locked myself out of the room I shared with Eliza, and always I was so tired, so very tired, that I simply could not stay awake, no matter how often I splashed water on my face or how much black coffee I drank. Finally, I surrendered and fashioned myself a nest among the towels in the supply room. I slept there every afternoon from 1:30 to 2, until the day Ward F. ran out of soap, and Francis Patterson was sent to get some. Altogether, I had to admit they were right. I was beginning to make a better patient than a nurse. My body had got the better of me and could no longer be trusted. To tell the truth, I didn't know myself anymore. And so I agreed to go home, not to the Milwaukee boarding house full of unmarried nurses where Eliza and I had carefully divided the freezing mustard-colored room into her side and my side, but back to the farm where I had grown up, where the snowy hills were white as bleached linen, and where my sister rocked her little girl to sleep beside the kitchen stove while she waited for her husband to come back from the war. I knew that at home, where I belonged, I could set myself right again. Outside the train station, I drew the city's breath, yeasty from the breweries and bittersweet from the chocolate factory, into my lungs and felt better already. My grip on my bag was tight. I wasn't late or excessively early, and now for the first time in weeks I was hungry, ravenous in fact. I went into the station and stopped at a counter to buy myself a bag of peanuts with extra salt and a cup of coffee that didn't burn my tongue. When I'd finished the nuts, I was still hungry. "Would you wrap half a ham salad?" I said. "No, better make it a whole, and some of that chicken. And maybe a piece of pie. The cherry, please." Someone down the counter was drinking a chocolate milkshake that looked awfully good, and I was tempted to order one of those. "That's what I like," the counterman said, punching numbers into the register. "A woman who can eat." So I changed my mind about the milkshake. As I was paying my bill, they called my train. "One way, miss? Going home?" the conductor asked, steadying himself with his hip along the seat in front of me. I nearly began to explain that it wasn't right, really, to consider it home any longer, even though legally the farm was half mine. Really, it belonged to my sister now, since she lived there, had a family there, and I was just going back for a restorative visit because somehow my body had taken on a life of its own. I wanted to confess that I'd been banished because I had failed as a nurse, because no one, including me, believed that I could coax soldiers back into proper shape when I was such a mess myself. But it isn't in me to say such things out loud. "That's right," I said. He winked. "Tickets!" he bawled and lurched away down the swaying car. Spring meant even less in the country than it did in the city that year, and by the time we pulled up to the icy little platform in Nagawaki, the sky was heavy with unfallen snow. The wind bit at my face so that I had to duck my head. I watched the toes of my boots as I stepped down the slick platform stairs and picked my way over the snow that drifted across the street in long pulls like taffy. My steps took me 1, 2, 3 buildings down from the platform where I stopped at the door of Heinzelman's Bait and Tackle. 12 grubs for a penny. I went in. The bell over the door jingled, and the coals in the corner stove gave an answering glow to the sudden draft. Then the curtains behind the counter parted, and Mary Louise Lindgren emerged from the back room. She smiled when she saw me, beamed, you could say, and wiped her hands on her apron front in that nervous way she had, as she hurried toward me. "Mandy, what are you doing home?" She put her hands on my shoulders, pressed her cheek against mine. "Oh, you're frozen, a block of ice." She held her warm palms to my face for a moment, and then grabbed hold of my wrist and gave it a little tug without pausing to let me answer her question. "Come over near the stove. I can't believe it. Just can't believe it's you. I wondered when I heard the bell, I wondered who would be coming in at this hour, and I thought, it's probably Harry Stoltz, but of course it couldn't have been because he's over in Watertown. And then I thought..." She would have gone on about what she'd supposed and what she'd thought after that and what she'd done next, but I interrupted. "I'm taking a vacation," I said. "A rest." It was true, in a way. "Matilda is going to be so happy," she frowned. "But why didn't she tell me? She was in here only 2 days ago." "Maddie doesn't know." That was all I needed to say, because she broke in immediately. "A surprise! How wonderful! And Mandy," she leaned toward me and lowered her voice discreetly, though there was no one else in the shop to hear, "I have a surprise, too."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?